PPI.org.
Good evening. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Good evening, Charlene.
Good evening, everybody.
Tonight, Good Maps, the talk about both outside and indoor maps. We have founder and CEO of Good Maps, Jose Gaztambide. Did I do that right?
You sure did. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
We also have Mike May, and Mike is the chief evangelist of Good Maps. Is Mike May in here yet?
He'll be joining momentarily.
Okay, excellent. Well, Mike and I have to say, go way back. So it's kind of fun to, you just don't know who you're going to run into in the community, you know, or in the world. It's a small world.
That's
right. Appreciate you guys joining with Good Maps, talking about the promise of accessible indoor maps. I want to start with, I guess I'll start with you since you're on, Jose. Can you give us some history of how you came to Good Maps and how it got its start?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were born out of the American Printing House for the Blind, and APH had their accessible navigation app nearby Explorer, and decided that accessible navigation was so complicated and there was so much to do, so many advancements to make, that it was really worth having an outside separate organization that was completely focused on that task. And so they created our company, which at the time was called Access Explorer and is now called Good Maps, because we realized the importance of indoor mapping in order to achieve accessible navigation. And so as APH was searching for a CEO, they were looking for somebody who had experience both in the private sector and in the social impact space. And I was coming from a career in consulting and a CEO of a tech company and had done a fair bit in impact investing and as a Peace Corps volunteer in Central America. And so we just both kind of realized that the fit was perfect. And I signed on right away.
You have some amazing, interesting background things.
Thank you.
I just want to tell people, you swam the English Channel?
Yes, ma'am. That's right.
With no wetsuit?
With no wetsuit.
Like, my first thought was, wow, he's insane. How cold is that?
That is around 60 to 62 degrees Fahrenheit.
Dang. And where's the cutoff for hyperthermia or hypothermia? Sorry.
Oh, you know, I never asked that question.
You did.
I don't know how close we were to it. I don't know the answer to that question.
So what's the distance?
As the crow flies, it is about 19.8 miles, but you never end up going a straight line. It's always a little bit of a loop. So I think we ended up doing around 26 miles.
Wow. That's so funny because that sounds so much like a Mike May statement. As crow flies. Well, that's pretty amazing. It's funny because you two both have really amazing, you know, abilities. And Mike, I just want to say, has, I think, the record for skiing downhill for blind people, 65 miles an hour, I believe it is. I thought that was so crazy. I don't know that I would even think about that challenge. So,
yeah, he is a wild man, that's for sure.
Well, I think he did it when he was pretty young, too. So, you know, it's like, well, it is interesting when you're young and fearless. So,
right.
Is he with us yet?
He is still working on joining our analyst as well.
So I think we'll just keep going. And I just want to ask you then, so what are the platforms that Good Maps does work on?
Yeah, so we are currently available on iOS, and we will be available on Android by the end of the year.
Ah, okay. And are you thinking about, like, I don't know if Windows Phone is even doing much anymore, but are you thinking to extending anywhere past iOS and Android? Like, would you be workable on a PC, or would there really be no point in doing that?
Yeah, so the navigation application as it currently exists will probably not end up on PC, but there will be navigation features that we will eventually be available to folks on PC or really through any kind of web-based access.
It looks like the outdoor part of the mapping with Good Maps kind of lets either Apple Maps or Google Maps kind of handle that outdoor part. Are there any differences, or what does Good Maps bring to that part?
Yeah, on the outdoor side, there's a few things that we really bring. I think the most exciting of which is intersection announcements. Mm-hmm. So as you're navigating down the street, just being made aware of what cross street you're coming up to.
Okay, and so if I'm at the corner of 34th and 40th, it will say the cross street there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. As well as how close you are.
Does it tell you? Oh, it tells you how close.
That's right.
And does it tell you like how many lanes? Like maybe like this is a two lane or whatever?
You know, it does not, but that's a great idea. We've never had anybody ask that.
Thank you. Can I get credit for that?
Absolutely.
So what speech is the Good Maps using on their platforms?
I'm sorry, which one?
Like the speech that the app uses. Will it be using the regular like Google Maps speech, or is it using another synth?
Yeah, so the user has the choice of what speech they want to listen to.
Okay.
So it's really just according to the settings on the phone.
Ah, gotcha. Excellent. Yeah. Tell me, what's your definition of an indoor map? Like, how would you define that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's actually not terribly dissimilar from an outdoor map. It's just for the insides of a building as opposed to the roads and the streets and the mountains and the things that you traditionally see in in an outdoor map. Now, the trick is that for indoor mapping, it's significantly tougher to achieve than outdoor mapping because you're constrained by the walls and the makeup of the building. And so historically, even though we've done a wonderful job of mapping the outdoors, we've really barely begun the process of mapping the indoors, and that's what we're all about.
So it feels like, you know, outdoor maps, if you've done a good job with it and with your app, that it tells you fairly basic things, you know, the street you're coming up to, what might be around you, you know, as you said, the cross street now you're announcing, things like that. But are there basic things that are just a given that the indoor maps or that you are planning on having the indoor maps announce?
Yeah, it's a great question. The things that you care about indoors are obviously very different than the things that you care about outdoors. So, for example, in a museum, you might be trying to find a particular exhibit, or in an airport, you're trying to find your gate or the TSA security line, or in your office, you're trying to find where Steve is or where Mike is. And we can't use the same kind of system that you use for outdoors, which is to really use a street-based approach. And so what you do is have to get really accurate on your positioning. So as you tell somebody to turn right down a hallway, they can have confidence that there is in fact a hallway there for them to turn down. And the POIs that you search for in the search bar, rather than being street names or addresses, are Mike's office, Steve's office, water fountain, restroom. And you search for them the same way you would for an outdoor map.
And it seems like you have both hardware and software to, you know, that you're creating on an indoor map. So how does this work?
Yeah, so the very first thing that happens is one of our mappers goes through a building with a with a LiDAR backpack. It looks a lot like the Ghostbusters backpack.
I want to stop you there. Can you explain the term LiDAR?
Yeah, so LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging. And if you think about it, there's like a little wand and it's got lasers at the tip of it, and it is shooting out pulses of light and then measuring wherever those pulses of light meet resistance. And it's doing that several hundred thousand times per second. And so the output is this really wonderful, what we call a point cloud, which is basically a collection of all of those little points of light where they found objects, and that we're able to identify the inside of the building and map the building based on those points of light that we collected.
Okay. So have there been other indoor successful mappers? And if so, can you talk about the difference between theirs and yours?
Yeah, indoor mapping has not really taken off in this country yet. And part of the reason is that the historical or the traditional way of mapping the indoors was very manual, which made it really costly and really expensive and really difficult to scale. And so we think that using LIDAR really reduces the amount of time that it takes to create a map, which overcomes a lot of the historical hurdles of mapping. To give you an idea, there is a medium-sized library here in Louisville that APH mapped during their nearby Explorer days. And it took a team of about two and a half weeks to map that library. It took our mapper 17 minutes to walk through it with the LIDAR device and another day or so of processing and layering on top of it all of the relevant points of interest. So it's just a really incredible time savings. I would say the other thing that we're doing that's really different and really exciting is about positioning, how we identify where somebody is on that map. As you probably know, Sam, GPS doesn't work indoors. It doesn't make its way through building materials. And so historically, people have relied on things like Bluetooth beacons or Wi-Fi fingerprinting, which are expensive and cumbersome and frankly not very accurate. We're using a camera-based system that gets us to about 1 meter of accuracy, and it doesn't require the installation of any kind of equipment whatsoever.
Wow. So let's talk about, I want to go back to that mapping the library. Talk to me about that process. You came with a backpack, and what did you do?
Yeah, so we walked through the space with the backpack the same way that you would if you were just a visitor.
Did you go down every aisle?
Yes. Yes. We went down every aisle. We went down all of the stairs. You know, you really have to explore the space because the LIDAR works on line of sight. So if it doesn't have visibility to a space, it can't map the space.
Okay.
At that point, we take all of that data that's sitting in the backpack, and then we upload it to some software that turns that raw data into the point clouds that we use. And then we go through a process of effectively slicing, taking horizontal slices of those point clouds to define the floor plans. And we turn those into the 2D floor plans. And then we go through and we label all of the different points of interest. Here's the water fountain. Here's the restroom. Here's the fiction stack and the nonfiction stack.
Wow.
So that when you search for things, they're available on the map and we can take you to them.
Well, I could sure use that in our library. We have four floors and there's a library desk on each floor. But are they in the same place? Why, no, they're not. So you could be literally walking around the middle of the library looking for the one that you know is on this floor. But if you can find, you know, where the aisle breaks and where they are. So, yeah, that's a
exactly.
Great deal. So I take that map and download it. And I go into the Louisville Library. And how many floors is that library?
It is two floors.
Two floors. Is there anything special about the second floor? I mean, is there anything that
question.
I would find on the second? If I wanted to go find something on the second floor, I don't know what's on the second floor. So let's just say, I presume I could have it download the app and tell it to find the escalator or elevator, whichever that it has. I presume maybe it has both. And go up there and how would it direct me? It would tell me, would it actually tell me point for point turn? Like go forward this many feet, take a left.
Yeah, I will hand the user experience question over to Mike. He's really excellent at this.
Okay, Mike, go for it.
Yes, exactly how you described it. You're getting turn-by-turn directions. And that's one of the big advancements over this experience that you're getting today versus, let's say, even a year ago, when most information indoors that was being delivered. It wasn't as accurate, but it was also based on, as the crow flies, or as we say, mm-hmm. getting warmer.
So how many businesses are currently on board with, you know, that you've mapped so far, and are they all in the U.S.?
We're just starting the mapping process. We released our product in September. So our list
I really caught you guys new.
You did. So it means the app is in good shape.
Yeah.
The database of what we have so far is fairly short. People probably don't realize that they've been using indoor maps in a fundamental way for a while. When you walk through an airport and somebody calls up a map of a sighted person calls up a map of how do I get from one gate to another?
Those are indoor things, right?
No, on your phone.
Oh, on the phone. Okay.
Yeah. So it'll show a map how to get from one gate to the other. That means that airport is mapped. A lot of baseball stadiums are mapped. But just as with GPS, when they first started mapping in the early 2000s, these maps are getting better, more accurate. And so when you have a LIDAR system that's doing the mapping, you're going to get something a lot more precise than what you did with previous mapping systems.
So can you take like those airport maps and easily transpose or transport them into your mapping system?
We're working on exactly that approach. I mean, our main thrust is the user interface being accessible for blind people. And mapping is one way to expand the buildings, because not that many buildings are mapped around the world. We want to expand the number of buildings and at the same time make sure our maps and anybody else's maps are accessible. And Jose has a great term for how we share our data.
And what's that?
Yeah, we like to think of it as a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, we came to realize early in our process that there really are so few indoor maps available. And we think we've cracked the code on how to create not just a platform, but a process that helps to solve that. And I think what that means is that we have an obligation to share those maps with other accessible navigation apps. You know, we're really proud of the application that we've created, and we hope that people enjoy it. But other people are tied to the apps that they currently use. And so we fully expect to offer those maps to other platforms because people deserve choice.
So can businesses map their own business, or do they need the specific equipment that you guys use?
Yeah, unfortunately, we really do need the specific equipment that we use. It's pretty cutting edge and cumbersome and pretty finicky, and so we've been training for a while on them, and they require trained folks right now.
What does the indoor mapping look like in other countries? Are there any other countries that are ahead of us, or is this really just a new thing that you guys stumbled on and are running with?
Yeah, I would say that there's really not any country out there that is further ahead than we are on indoor mapping. I will point out that both Israel and Canada, their versions of the ADA require the kind of technology that that we are creating in their buildings. In Canada, it's for any building that receives federal funding of any kind. And so we're seeing a regulatory requirement starting to creep in that hopefully is going to make this kind of mapping technology more widely available and allow people to focus on it. But everybody struggles with the same thing that we described earlier, which is, you know, the technology hasn't historically been there to make these maps cost efficiently.
Wow, I know somebody in Canada, they're never going to let me hear the end of this. So can you tell me, so they are automatically mapping their buildings, or how does this go?
No, they have to contract with a service provider like us in order to map those buildings.
Both Israel and Canada.
That's right. And for Canada, that law is just starting to come into effect. It was passed about a year ago, and those requirements are just coming into effect. Mike, how long has it been for Israel? It's been a few years.
It has. And I think one of the benefits of an Israel is when you have a smaller country, it's a little bit easier to implement these things. And then, as with any law, the question is, how does it get enforced? And remains to be seen in Canada, you know, how they're actually going to push this to be done, and what are the repercussions if they don't?
Well, and we're dealing with that all over the place with ADA things, right?
Yeah.
Even some basic things like website accessibility. How do you enforce? So that will be an interesting, I hope better than how it has been going. Mike, I do have a question for you. I found that title very interesting and I'm seeing it pop up a little more now, that chief evangelist. Tell me what that means to you.
Well, for me, it really is part of what it takes in order to promote accessibility and promote navigation. These are two things that need evangelizing. Mm-hmm. So in a practical sense, it means selling, promoting, advocating, all of those things to really advance those two topics.
Excellent. So you are kind of the one that brags about good maps. and the process, I'm sure.
Right. This is something I've been doing for 25 years. So right.
You are no stranger.
It's a glorified soapbox. And that's why we appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners about it.
So I want to go back to more the in-store or in-business mapping, in-building mapping. Maybe that's what we should call it, too, because it's fascinating. There are so many different kinds of places. You're right that it would be very difficult to make a, quote, mold and have it, you know, just plop in the things, because there's so many different things that you might need for that. What happens, let's just take Target or any type of department store that you map. You might map, you can help me out here if I miss important things, but like dressing rooms, bathrooms, drinking fountains, maybe break rooms, maybe, although the public wouldn't necessarily need to know. Certainly customer service counters and the counters where you pay for things. What happens about the aisles, shoes, clothing, and then what happens when they change them?
That is such a great question, Sam, and it speaks to one of the things that's really tricky about indoor mapping. Mm-hmm. The walls and the ceilings and even the doors tend not to change, but the things that happen within those walls do change, to your point, like a Target. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that we're really excited about the approach that we're taking being camera-based, because with things like the AR kit and a lot of what we're seeing in artificial intelligence and image recognition are going to allow us to dynamically update the items that are in that map. So for example, I can tell you that there's a meeting room, but when you walk in that meeting room, how do you know where the table is? How do you know where the chairs are? How do you know where the available chairs are? And by using somebody's camera, what we can do is allow you to scan and actually identify where those are. Now, it's a little bit more tricky in a grocery store because there are so many dynamic objects, but so long as the store is actually tracking where they are moving things, which many of them are doing these days, we can reflect that in our maps.
So talk about what that means to track where you're moving things.
Yeah, so, you know, let's take a Kroger or a grocery store. Perhaps on Monday, the salsa is on aisle 14, and then they switch some things around, and now it's on aisle 20. Oftentimes, there is a back-end computer system that's tracking those. And so long as we can get access to that back-end system, as soon as they reflect that in their technology, we can reflect it in ours.
Yeah, they have to keep track of that for their own inventory purposes.
Right.
And there are high-end industrial and systems, multi-million dollar systems. You mentioned Target. Of course, that's a Minneapolis company. And in their 2,000 stores, they have positioning built into their lights, into their LED lights.
Oh, fascinating.
Also working with a camera. And they don't use that much for consumers yet. We assume they will in the future. But it helps a lot in inventory tracking and the staff knowing where to stock things and so forth. And they have accuracy under a meter.
And so your maps would kind of use that?
We can work with them, but those are such expensive systems that smaller venues, libraries, museums, and so forth, they can't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars
right.
on lighting systems, and we provide an alternative to that.
I noticed that in front of a lot of the companies, there's beacons. Talk about the beacons in front of those public entrances and how they work and what they're hooked up to, if anything.
Yeah, the beacons are what have been installed for indoor navigation in the last 6-8 years or so, and they provide variable accuracy. And that word variable is particularly scary for a blind person. Mm-hmm. You really want to know, is it 10-foot accuracy or 30-foot accuracy? And then you know what you have to deal with. In the case of GPS, it's 30 or feet or more. And so you know that with the Bluetooth beacons that you're talking about, that variability made them really not very helpful when you started hooking apps up to them and guiding people around. And so the camera-based system is the next step, the next generation in more accurate, reliable positioning and mapping indoors.
So the beacons are just a leftover in a sense. They don't work with your cameras necessarily?
Well, we will use a beacon at a door to help with the transition from outdoors to indoors. Hmm. But instead of having to have 50 beacons in a building, we could have one at each entrance and that's it.
The LiDAR sounds like it's one of the big things that helps you be able to do as much mapping in an indoor facility as you can. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely.
So is this new or has just nobody thought of it?
You know what's really funny is LiDAR has actually been around as a technology for several decades, I think going back 50 or 60 years now. But what's really propelled LiDAR and actually made it possible for us to use is that it is the undergirding technology of a lot of the autonomous vehicle work that is going on.
Talking about autonomous vehicles.
Yeah. And so, you know, these big companies and a lot of VCs are just pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into LiDAR and making it better and making it smaller and making it faster and making it cheaper. And that is trickling down to benefit those of us who aren't worried about LiDAR in the sense of a car, but more in the sense of a backpack. And so, you know, to give you an idea of just how quickly things are changing in the LiDAR world, when we bought our first LiDAR device about a year and a half ago, we were generating about 45,000 points per second. That's how many arrows or lasers shoot out of the LiDAR device. In the unit that we're using now, it's at around 600,000 points per second.
So
we have multiplied by 15 the output of the LiDAR device, and it's really just by benefit of what's happening in the autonomous vehicle space.
And even the iPhone 12 has LiDAR in a very rudimentary way. They're starting to introduce it and helping in taking pictures.
So I'm glad you said that because so when you have your app, will you have it be like only working on X iPhone platform to the latest, or will you try to have it work as low as, I mean, how low will you go in your platforms, do you think?
So our official testing goes as far back as the iPhone 7, and that is the oldest model that we will officially support. We have done some testing on the iPhone 6, and it works just fine. But in terms of official support, the iPhone 7 is where we'll stop.
Well, for all those people who will poo-poo me, I loved my 6. I recently gave it up, but I did love it. but now I've grown up a little bit. you're going to have it on Android by when?
By the end of this year, 2 months or less.
There's a lot of different phones with Android. So how will you deal with that? Are they mostly, they'll be on this similar platform or on the similar update? You'll go by update then?
Yeah, so we're testing and supporting the four or five most commonly used Android forms, and those will be the ones where the app works perfectly. I'm sure there are many, many more where it will work as well, but we just won't be officially supporting those. But we'll get about 95% coverage of the available Android devices.
I'd like not to state monetary value, but will this be a free app for users, or will they have to pay?
It is free for users. We think it's just really important that people who are blind or visually impaired not pay for information the rest of us get for free. This should be a public utility.
Oh, free is my favorite four-letter word, so I always like that. So can you talk about the phone positioning? Because I find it interesting with the LiDAR, it must be maybe picky. I don't know. When you're using the indoor map, are you holding the phone out like in front of you? How how much can you get away with having the phone in a pocket or in something? Talk to me about how that works.
Yeah, you do have to have the camera exposed. And in a pocket, I use mine in an airport with other apps like Scene AI. We'll even read the gates. And if I'm using Aira, I like it in a pocket. Not every shirt has one.
Especially for women.
Especially. So a lanyard can work. Or there's a pouch you can put on a backpack strap, which is my other favorite way to use it. It does have to be exposed. But the good news is it doesn't have to see 100% of the environment. So if you're blocked temporarily, you pass somebody, that's not going to be an issue in terms of what the camera sees. And the lighting, it can't be pitch dark, but if you have low lighting, it's not going to be a big issue.
I presume it can tell you when you're drifting off course? Like, how does it tell you if you're getting kind of off course?
Well, I think it's going to tell you where you are, and you're going to determine are you off course or not. The system does have some drift, and it's correcting for that itself, and that's transparent to the user. But if you're walking along and you're assuming this meter accuracy, and it says turn in 20 feet, it might be 18 feet, but that you're going to adjust for those things yourself.
Well, it's probably not made for this, but I'm wondering, is there any sense of adding the idea of, like, if you're going to hit something, that it tells you object in front of you, or that would have to be in the map? I guess I'm just curious to...
It is a camera.
Yes. Know? So I'm curious if you've thought about having it be able to tell you if you're going to slam into something.
It's dangerous, Sam. We think about lots of things.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to be in one of your meetings because I was thinking about that. Boy, you could deal with those head height things that are just the killers to me. Anything's bad that you hit, but especially those face high, things.
Yeah.
That sometimes guide dogs don't see, and certainly canes don't. So I was just curious if you've gone there.
It's not meant for obstacle detection yet, but you think about what a camera can detect. I'm particularly interested in crowd detection and clumps of people in these days of having to do physical distancing. I'd like to know, am I approaching a clump of eight people, and if there's room, I can tell my dog, right, and try to go around them. That's not something we're doing yet, but you can see how it could head in that direction.
I have to cheat and tell you, I had a shepherd that used to take her own remedy to that and part the crowd. Uh-huh. She'd actually take her head and say, get over. And I used to be a little bit, embarrassed when my instructors say, what are you letting her do? But after a while, when crowds take up the whole entire hallway when they don't have to, or block an entire escalator when they shouldn't, I'm like, you get what you deserve.
Nothing like a cold nose on somebody's bare leg.
Exactly. So that's interesting. I do like that. I don't know where, if you would even want to go anywhere near this, but the facial recognition has been being played with a number of apps as well as even your phone, with your own, but with other products out there that are playing with recognizing faces of people you know. So I'm not sure if that's even thought of being put in the app, but.
Well, I'd love to have people recognize, not necessarily face recognition, but there's other ways besides that to know that, since we all have Bluetooth on our phones and it has our identity, and if we want to share that identity, it would be nice to know. I mean, Sam, you and I could pass each other and maybe have in the Minneapolis airport and not know it.
So, oh, that's true. That's true.
A people recognition app could definitely do that.
Fascinating. Yeah. So there's so many places that you could go with this. I think it'd be almost hard to not get off track with this. I wonder if do you have ideas of using this map for other things besides just blind people?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really, really good question and a really important question. There are 5% of venues that are going to install this kind of technology because it's the right thing to do, because it's mission aligned. But how do we get into the other 95% of venues? What kind of value can we bring with these indoor maps beyond accessible navigation?
Right.
And one of them is frankly just sighted navigation. There's a real need for navigation for anybody in a hospital or in an airport. We were just in the hospital over the new year welcoming my son into the world. And I got lost every day that I was in there. I would have loved to have been able to find the cafeteria or know the cafeteria hours or get to, our doctor's office more quickly. There's a real need there.
Yeah.
And there's other really interesting, really compelling things that you can do with these maps. We've started developing a first responder focused version of this. And we've been interviewing firefighters. I'll never forget this. I had one who said to me, if I had had this kind of tool, I would have attended far fewer funerals over the years. That's a moment that you don't soon forget. And, if you're a firefighter walking into a building you've never walked into, that's inherently dangerous. So if we can give them some sense of the building layout, where the dangerous materials are, what they are, what the building is made of, they can really approach that building with a sense of strategy that they couldn't otherwise do.
I suspect that if you can glom onto that, you can get more and more businesses to, and some of this will be city and state to kind of channel into that and send money towards making that accessible for those other people as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, we talked about the firefighters. That's obviously really important. But I think there's value for other first responders as well. Mm-hmm. If you read the after action report of the Parkland, Florida shooting, there were about 9 fatalities at that shooting that the people writing the report estimated could have been saved if first responders had made it there quicker or had been able to more easily identify who needed care. And so if you think about that, that's all happening indoors. There are gunshot identification systems that have not taken off because they generate this information and then have nowhere to plot it. So if you combine our maps and our ability to route people to a very specific location with that gunshot identification, you're not going to prevent shootings, but you are going to increase the rate at which first responders can arrive on the scene and provide help.
That's fascinating, actually. I can see where you might meet a little bit of pushback from certain parts of people, certain people, but I think that that's a great idea. So I presume you're really going to start pushing this. And if someone has a favorite mall or store or something that they just feel really needs to be mapped, what can they do?
Yeah, absolutely. They can reach out to us at info@goodmaps.com or reach out to their particular venue and have them reach out to us to get mapped.
Now, presumably, the place where they want mapped is going to be the ones to pay into this. So what do you guys do then to kind of convince them? Is there anything that we or the user can do beforehand? Can they go talk to them and then you guys will talk to them? Or how does that usually work? Or how do you approach them then?
Yeah, well, I think everybody has to channel their inner Mike May and become the chief evangelist of a particular community. But, the part of it is about it being the right thing to do. And part of it is about the benefits that come with the mapping beyond just the accessibility and the right thing to do. And that's why we're building things like the visual navigation.
Do you see a sense of this being built into the ADA or law or anywhere so that there is a little more teeth to be able to do this?
That's the Holy Grail.
Yes, it is. Yes and no, right? Yes, it is. But you got to get it to be, you have to have consequence if they don't, but which you know.
That's it.
But so are there plans of what to do to get it in place or,
Yeah, so we are working with a few folks in Washington. We know that a rewrite or a refresh of the ADA is on the table and has been for a few years. But obviously, the current conditions aren't really conducive to a lot of major legislation.
Yeah,
so we're going to have to be a little bit patient. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to be a little bit patient and wait for that window to open. And as soon as it does, really pound the table for this technology.
It seems like the highest probability is to convince venues that there's economic value to them in having disabled customers and having more convenience for sighted customers. I was surprised to hear from a hospital venue that their Medicare reimbursement rates are based on customer satisfaction. And if people can find their way around a hospital easier, they're going to be happier and they're going to then give higher ratings, which then translates into better revenue for that hospital.
Excellent. And for, you know, like you talked about the emergency techs and finding their way around the hospitals, right? When they're bringing people there. So that's another thing. I just want to basically touch on, because we've talked so much about, you know, LiDAR and how this works. There must be some things that make certain indoor places difficult or next to impossible to map. Is lighting the only thing, or are there others?
Yeah, good question. Any place where the settings are often changing can be a little bit tricky. Because the way that the camera-based positioning works is it takes pictures from the venue that we map, and it does something called scraping, which is it basically says there's this color here, there's this angle here, there's this shading here. And then when a person is walking through that particular venue, they'll take the camera picture that they're seeing and then try to match it with the pictures from the original scan. And so if that venue is constantly changing, then there might not be a good return on that picture trying to be matched. Now, what our partner is working on is making that scan something that is constantly refreshing itself so that there isn't that issue with the pictures not returning a location. Short answer to your question is, in the near future, no. There shouldn't really be a space that's particularly difficult to map. We should be able to go pretty much anywhere.
I'm thinking of a place like an exhibit hall where you can map the building. It's like a big warehouse. And then for each conference, they set up the booths in different places. You have to be able to do mapping at the very last minute when they're making decisions about these things. But, you know, that's a one-off. If you consider that 0.01% of the world is mapped indoors, there's nowhere to go but up.
Ah, yes. Yeah, and really you're thinking of the, you know, ACB and, you know, and those kind of conferences, but also anybody who holds a conference similar to that, you know, doctors' conferences, all those places that have, you know, maybe exhibits that do that. Wow. Well, this is great. I am excited, but I feel like I've seen not very many, but some people come in with great excitement about how they're going to indoor map and it fizzles. So tell me your plan for keeping this going.
Sam, that is the definition of the last 25 years of indoor mapping. It's exciting. Everybody, because everybody wants it. Everybody sees the value.
Right.
And then the mapping and the positioning are too expensive. Mm-hmm. They're not reliable. And it does fizzle. But that's happened, you know, that happened with voice recognition as well, starting in the late 70s. And it took 25 years before we really had true voice recognition. I think we're at the point where we are turning that corner so that this is really going to be something viable.
So you guys think you're there? You think that there's no going back and that it will actually come to fruition?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, any entrepreneur has to approach a problem of this size with some humility. But I really do think if you look at the technology, where it is now versus where it was even 2 to 5 years ago, we are tackling this problem in the right way at the right time. And camera-based sensors and LiDAR are the future of technology. It's where the investment is happening at Apple, Google, Microsoft, and all the other tech giants. And so we're taking advantage of that. For the first time, accessibility has a seat at the table early, is taking advantage of the technology early, and is going with the direction of the river instead of trying to swim against the current.
And you're right. I mean, Mike, you're right that this has been a long time coming, and that everyone wants that. I mean, we've all walked into somewhere and says, where is the bleep is the, you know, wherever you're looking for. So, you know, we've all wondered how to get around somewhere. And to me, it is just as much of a sighted problem as a blind or visually impaired problem, right? I don't think there's anybody that's immune to not being lost when they first come into a building. And the ones that are lucky enough to walk up to a kiosk and just look at it and be able to know, you know, that's good for them. But so I hope you're right. I'm very excited about this, and I wish you guys the best of luck. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Well, and our sighted friends and customers, they can walk up to that kiosk, they see where it is, and they walk off and they're lost. They can't find it. So I think this has a lot of value to all of us.
Yes, that is so true. Yeah. Well, thank you guys very much for joining in. I really appreciate that. This has been great. I want you to come back in a year, and I want to hear where you are.
We would love to. Thank you so much for having us, Sam.
Yeah, get us into the Great Mall of America.
That's right. I'm like, you better be coming here. So thank you so much. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability in Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. The music you are hearing, besides our theme, is from Galen Lee, one of our one of our local favorites. She's up in Minnesota. Also, we were speaking with Jose Gaztempide and Mike May. Jose is the CEO and founder of BidNaps, and Mike May is the chief evangelist. And Charlene Dahl, thank you to her. She is my research team. Annie Harview, she is my engineer. And thanks to all who listen. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.